there and welcome to the County Conversation, a podcast featuring employees and subject matter experts from the Fairfax County government, assessing programs, services, and items of interest to residents of Fairfax County. I'm your host, Jim Person, and today I'm chatting with Rachel Kempf, Environmental Health Specialist with Fairfax County's Health Department, and she's here to talk to us about ticks, mosquitoes, and mosquito-borne illnesses, and more importantly, how you can prevent them. Rachel, welcome, and thanks for being on the County Conversation Podcast with us.
Hi, good morning, Jim. Good morning. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. Nice to have you as well. Ticks, mosquitoes, and mosquito-borne illnesses.
That's right.
Definitely a topic, I'm assuming, for summertime. They're not something we have to worry about in winter. Is that true? Or?
That is not true, believe it or not. There are tick species that are active throughout the winter months, including the black-legged tick. So the adult stages of the black-legged tick are most active in the fall and winter. So it's always a good idea to protect yourself from tick bites. Mosquitoes do go away during the winter for a little while, but ticks continue to be active for the entire year.
Oh, okay. Well, I learned something already. I just kind of assumed it was a summertime warmer weather problem.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, let me backstep a minute because we talked pre-chat about environmental health specialist, and I was curious about the title. What is it that you do day-to-day activities? What does an environmental health specialist do?
Right. So I'm a senior environmental health specialist for the health department, specifically within our division of environmental health and disease-carrying insects program. And the goal of our program is to protect the citizens of Fairfax County from vector-borne illnesses transmitted by ticks and mosquitoes. So we do a lot of activities that fall under what's called an integrated pest management program. So using a wide variety of different techniques to surveil and control different vector species. So on a day-to-day, we do a combination of field work, lab work. We conduct adult mosquito surveillance during the summer. We have a robust passive tick surveillance program in the winter months.
Let me just interrupt you there and ask a question. You used the word vector a couple of times. Sure. What does vector mean?
So a vector is an organism that transmits a pathogen from one organism to another. So for example, a mosquito might pick up a pathogen, might pick up the West Nile virus from a reservoir bird species, and then transmit that in turn to a human or another animal. So it's passing that pathogen along from one animal to another.
Okay. Simple explanation. Not for a technical sounding term, I guess.
Yeah.
Another thing you mentioned, surveillance program. The first thing that popped in my mind is you guys are out there looking for little ticks and mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that, is it? What do you mean surveillance? How do you do that?
Well, it's kind of that. Okay. So we have adults and larval mosquito surveillance that we conduct. So our adult program involves going out into the field and setting adult mosquito traps to collect adult specimens. We bring them back to our lab and identify them by species and submit them to the Fairfax County Public Health Lab for pathogen testing. So specifically, West Nile virus in our mosquito populations and Lyme disease bacteria for our ticks. We also conduct larval surveillance operations. So we are on a daily basis out looking at county-maintained stormwater management facilities and looking for the presence of mosquito larvae, specifically the mosquitoes that can transmit West Nile virus. And when we do find populations that are above certain thresholds, we will apply pesticides to those environments to control those developing larvae.
Okay. Just a note here for our listeners, in case you're listening in the future. We are talking now in July of 2026, so summer, starting to get warm. What is the current state right now? You mentioned West Nile virus. Current state of West Nile virus, Lyme disease, any other mosquito-borne illnesses?
So West Nile virus is something that we see in our mosquito population every year. It's well-established in this area now. Typically, we start seeing our first positive pools around this time of year, although we have not had any positive pools as of yet. But typically, it's something that peaks in the summer months, and we see most of our human cases from mid to late August into September.
So how does West Nile virus get transmitted to humans?
So West Nile virus is present in bird populations, which act as a reservoir for the virus. And it is transmitted from those bird populations to humans and other hosts by a specific genus of mosquito, genus and species of mosquito called a Culex. Sometimes they're referred to by their common name, which is the common house mosquito. It's a dingy tan and brown mosquito. It typically prefers to bite birds, but it can bite people opportunistically. So typically what's happening is that mosquito is out there picking up a virus from a bird, and then, you know, opportunistically finding another host where it then transfers that virus into the host.
So is that Culex? What I would call the nuisance mosquitoes, that's the one that's always around, or is it?
Actually, no. So our primary nuisance mosquito in Fairfax County is called the tiger mosquito. So this one can transmit West Nile virus, but it's not a very effective vector of West Nile. But it is something that we have a huge problem with in Fairfax County because it typically lives very closely. It's closely located with people. It lives in backyards. It uses really tiny amounts of standing water held in containers around the yard, to develop its larvae. And it really doesn't take more than, you know, a couple tablespoons of water to sit around for a week or more. And you can have, you know, huge populations of these in the yard.
Okay. We'll get to how to fix that or how to prevent them in a minute. But I want to keep on this West Nile mosquito-borne illness trail for a minute. Are there any, symptoms, red flags that somebody should look for to say, hey, I might have this?
Yeah. So the vast majority of people that contract West Nile virus are asymptomatic. So they won't experience any symptoms at all. A small percentage of people will develop flu-like illness. So, you know, they might develop headache, fatigue, just generally feeling run down. And if, you know, if they've been outside and receiving a lot of mosquito bites, that's definitely something you might want to follow up with your doctor. However, it is, you know, pretty underreported because it's sort of got nonspecific symptoms and it resembles other illnesses. But the real issue with West Nile is the neuroinvasive cases. So there's a very small percentage of people that can potentially develop a life-threatening neurological version of West Nile, which can lead to meningitis, encephalitis, some pretty severe, neurological symptoms. And it can require hospitalization for extended periods of time. So definitely if you start to experience any neurological symptoms, headache, dizziness, you know, fatigue, that's something that you want to see your doctor about.
Okay. I want to make sure we talk about ticks.
Hot topic.
Yeah. I know there's a difference between a tick and a mosquito, but for our purposes, what are the differences or things we should be concerned about when we're talking ticks versus mosquitoes, like related to illness or bites, that kind of thing?
Well, they definitely have much different biology, very different biology. So mosquitoes are insects, so they have six legs. They are part of Diptera, so they're a type of fly with two wings, versus ticks, which are more closely related to arachnids. And they have eight legs, except in their larval form, they have six legs. And mosquitoes typically will come in and take a bite and fly off, versus a tick, which will crawl on your skin and attach itself to you and feed for an extended period of time. But they do have in common that they both need the protein in blood to develop their eggs.
Hmm. Okay, interesting.
So they're both parasitic, but in different ways.
Yeah, wonderful. We are on the County Conversation Podcast talking with Rachel Kempf, Environmental Health Specialist with Fairfax County's Health Department. Interesting topic for us today, mosquitoes, ticks, and mosquito-borne illnesses. Let's continue with the ticks.
Sure.
How do you remove them? I mean, I've heard lots of different ways you're supposed to, but what's the correct health department approved way to remove a tick?
Well, there's so many approaches that people have to this. You know, I've heard all kinds of all kinds of stories about people using Vaseline or burning the ticks off. Or
nail polish.
Yeah. You don't want to do any of that. So the best way that you can remove a tick is a simple pair of tweezers. You don't need to get any of the fancy tick removal tools or anything like that. Just a sharp, fine tip pair of tweezers. So ticks, when they attach to your skin, will insert their mouth parts and sort of anchor themselves under the skin. So with the tweezers, your goal is to get the tip of the tweezers as close to the skin as possible and just pull up and with a slow, steady, even pressure until the tick releases from your skin. So they have a mouth part called a hypostome, which is, it's got these sort of backward facing barbs on it. So there's a little bit of resistance as you're pulling it out of your skin. But as long as you keep that pressure up and just continue to pull, they'll pop right out. If the mouth parts break out or break off under the skin, not a big deal. Doesn't increase any risk of disease transmission or anything. It just, your body will treat it like a splinter and eventually get rid of it.
Oh, okay. So how do you know? I mean, is it, they're so small. How do you, if you got it all?
It would be really difficult to tell. But if you look at the tick and it's missing its head, you know, that's a good indication that, that you haven't gotten all of it.
Okay.
But it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know. All right, let's go back to mosquitoes a minute. And there's something called a bullseye myth. Is it, what is that? It's like for a bite. Is that a mosquito bite or a tick?
I think you might be referring to the bullseye rash that's associated with Lyme disease.
Oh, okay.
So Lyme disease is a pretty serious illness that's transmitted by the black-legged tick, sometimes called the deer tick. And a bullseye rash is a distinct symptom that some people develop around the site of the bite wound. Not everybody develops that bullseye rash, but if you do see something like that, it's something you want to see your doctor about right away because it is really indicative of a Lyme infection.
Okay. So, sorry, went to Lyme disease.
That's okay.
Didn't realize I was.
Yeah.
So, if you do get Lyme disease now, is there any cure or what do you do?
Sure, yeah. So, if you catch the infection early enough, it's highly treatable with a course of doxycycline. If you don't treat it appropriately or it goes untreated, it can develop into a more long-term complication over time. So you might develop some chronic symptoms. But if you catch the disease early enough in the progression, you can treat it with antibiotics and fully clear it from the system.
So I promised earlier we would come back to the yards and talk about how to, you know, with our gardens or just our yards in general, you know, how do we keep ticks, mosquitoes, and that kind of thing? So talk to me a little bit, how do we keep these pests out of our backyard?
Absolutely. So the best thing you can do to reduce the number of mosquitoes around your home is to look for any source of standing water at all that you might have around your property. And mosquitoes can be really creative about what they use for habitat, particularly container breeder mosquitoes like Asian tiger mosquitoes and others. So these really only require, again, a couple of tablespoons of water. So you want to look around at things like flower pot saucers or buckets or outdoor storage items that you might have outside. Tires are a big source of mosquitoes. But even things like tarps that you would drape over a wood pile or something like that, they can collect these little pockets of water on top of them that can produce mosquitoes. Another big issue you see in the county are these, they're called black corrugated drain pipes or downspout extension pipes, rather. So these are the pipes that come off of your downspouts to sort of funnel rainwater away from the foundation. And these pipes, even if they're buried, even if they extend, you know, a considerable distance from the house, they can become warped, and those ridges inside of the pipes can hold a significant amount of water. So as long as there's water being held in it, even if it's underground, those mosquitoes will find the water inside of those pipes and lay their eggs in those. So that's a sort of hidden source that we see really frequently throughout the county.
Thinking, trying to visualize the pipe, even if you have it just on the outside of your house attached to a downspout, there's only so much angle down it can be. So even if there's a little bit of flat, that's going to be a great place to catch water.
Absolutely.
And you've got mosquitoes.
Yep. Yep. If they have any kind of warp or they don't drain fully, then you can end up with a pocket of water in there that lasts all summer long. Sorry. There are some ways that you can mitigate that. So
talking about that.
Yeah. So making sure that the downspouts have a tight connection to these corrugated extension pipes, and that the opening is covered in some way, so that you can cover it with a pair of pantyhose or some mesh screening, just anything to keep the female mosquitoes from flying inside that pipe.
Okay.
If you must have them, the best thing you can do is get rid of them altogether. But there are also some that you can buy that have perforations in them that allow the water to drain out a little bit better. You can also treat them with a mosquito larvicide, like a mosquito dunk, on a regular basis to kill any larvae that are inside of it.
Okay. Well, since you went there, let's talk about the pesticides, chemicals,
sure.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot over the years, dibacaridin, oil of lemon, eucalyptus.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about which is better, if there's one to use for one scenario versus another. Just talk to me in general about those.
So the best repellent is the one that you will use.
Okay.
So a lot of people have different, you know, personal preferences based on the smell or the feel. You know, DEET can feel a little bit oily, so some people prefer picaridin. But really, as long as you're using a repellent product that's on the EPA's registration list, you're in good shape. These are all compounds that are approved to repel both ticks and mosquitoes.
So list them again. I kind of went through them, but tell me what they are.
So some examples are, the main ones are DEET and picaridin, but you'll also see oil of lemon eucalyptus, IR3535, and others. So there's a fair number of them on the EPA's registered repellent list.
Okay. Before we get too far, I want to make sure that we give the listeners a resource or a reference. Is there a website, phone number, anything you want to make sure they have where they can get more information?
Sure. So they can always visit our website, which is www.fairfaxcounty.gov/health/fightthebite. We have lots of information on there about vector-borne illnesses, the things that our program is doing throughout the county. And there's also a great little program that we have, which is a tick ID service. So county residents can, if they do receive a tick bite, they can either bring that tick to the health department, or we have an online submission form on our website where you can submit photos of the tick to us, and one of our biologists will identify what species of tick it is, what that tick can potentially transmit, and just give some guidance on, you know, next steps.
And that's, again, on the health department website that
yes,
you just listed.
Yes, that's on our disease-carrying insects page.
Okay. And so then I'm assuming that you guys also then take all this data, however you want to pronounce it, and then that helps you, I don't know, do what with?
That's right. So it helps us to inform our surveillance and control activities throughout the county, yeah.
All right. Fact or myth, kind of our fact or fiction, if you will, myth busting,
yeah,
if you will. Does eating garlic or taking vitamin B keep mosquitoes away?
Well,
I mean, maybe garlic. You don't want to get too close to anybody eating a bunch of garlic.
Well, I'll just say that there are definitely mosquitoes are sometimes drawn to, you know, like more to certain people than others based on their body chemistry, the makeup of their perspiration, things they've eaten. So things like, you know, drinking alcohol can increase the number of mosquito bites that you receive. Certain things, certain physiological processes definitely draw mosquitoes in.
So does blood type, is blood type one of those?
Potentially, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of different factors that go into that, you know, things like how much carbon dioxide you're producing, or what, you know, again, what your sweat smells like. Mosquitoes are really attracted to different chemistry in different people.
Okay, interesting. Is there one thing you want listeners to take away from the conversation today? If you had to choose one thing.
I had to choose one thing. Number one thing, make sure you're protecting yourself when you're out there. We do have vectors in Fairfax County that can transmit, you know, some nasty diseases. So make sure you're using repellents. You can treat your clothing with 0.5% permethrin to prevent other mosquito and tick bites, and just make sure you're, you know, cognizant of where you're at. If you're in the woods, make sure you're staying on the trails and not going off into different types of tick habitat. Make sure you're conducting thorough tick checks when you get back. If you do receive a tick bite, don't panic. If For the most part, it takes a couple of days for these pathogens to be transmitted. So as long as you get that tick off, you know, pretty quickly, you're at a much reduced risk of disease transmission. So yeah, just protect yourself when you're out there, but still enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah. Give us that website one more time, if you don't mind.
Sort of thing. So it's www.fairfaxcounty.gov/health/fightthebite.
Awesome. fairfaxcounty.gov/health/fightthebite. Rachel, thanks so much for being here on the podcast today. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Rachel Kempf, she is an environmental health specialist with Fairfax County's Health Department. Again, thanks to her for being here. Thanks to you for listening. If you want to hear more conversations with Fairfax County's finest, be sure to follow us on soundcloud.com/fairfaxcounty, as well as our podcast webpage, fairfaxcounty.gov/podcast. The County Conversation is produced by the Fairfax County, Virginia government.